Good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday, February 16th. No, Tuesday, February 16th. Get that right. And 12:40, and we are here for OCAM lecture. I'm going to start a screen share. We'll get this working. And we left off talking about synthesis. And I'm realizing that as we left off talking about synthesis, that I talked a lot about the retrosynthesis and the process and the synthons and all of that stuff. And what I did not do was show you any examples. And after that lecture, I put away all the synthesis stuff and grabbed out the next chapter, chapter 13, alcohols, and was all ready to go. And then as I was sitting there, I was thinking, well, I really don't know how to use all that stuff we just did. And so I was kind of thinking that today might be a good day to do a bunch of synthesis examples and show you how we work through some of these, both some of the simpler ones and some of the more complicated problem sets. Does that sound like a plan? In terms of a way to go, rather than just jumping in and starting off on the alcohols. All right, one more thing I need. That window, that's what I need. No, come back. Okay. All right, sounds like that's the plan. I've got the chat open. Feel free to drop me any questions at any point. Feel free to also offer suggestions as we're going through these. And so it can be a little bit more of an interactive session. It doesn't just have to be me telling you exactly how this all goes together. So synthesis examples. And I'm going to pull, I did a little bit more Canvas work last night. And I've been fleshing out the Canvas shell to a greater degree and linking all of the videos for each of the individual chapters within Canvas, putting in a little introduction, putting in the problem sets, just making it a little bit more fleshed out. So I actually have a quiz up for the synthesis problems already, and I have more synthesis problems for you to be able to work from along with an answer key, and those are already up in Canvas and ready to go for you. So you should be able to see those and have access to those. Okay, there are some common themes as we go through these, and I'll try to highlight as we go through and watch those common themes. Number one, let's start with an easy one. So what we want to do is we want to make a molecule from any reagents of two carbons or less. This one, well, I said this one is easy. This one is complicated in that I don't tell you what your starting point is. All I tell you is that you have to use two carbons or less in each of your reagents in order to put it together. So that means that we just need to probably think about splitting this thing in half and looking at the fact that we have two carbon chunks now that we can take that back into. And the first thing that I wind up doing as I start that retrosynthesis and working backwards is I ask myself, where can I make carbonyls from? So what is a way in which I can make this carbonyl? And of all the different ways that we have to make carbonyls, I think we have like two, maybe three ways of making carbonyls, that one of the ways that comes to mind is to be able to do either this guy, because if I hydrate that, it could go back to a carbonyl, or that guy. And I need to think about both of these seem to be viable, but one way may be shorter than the other. And actually, this is not a bad idea to show how sometimes you can have multiple solutions to a problem. Let's call this one A and the other one B. So we have two butine and we have one butine. Any one of these look to be better than the other? Does anybody see anything here that seems to be easier to take apart back into two carbon chunks? Either A or B. JC, you're going for B. I'm going to take a leap of faith and say that what you're seeing is that I could easily disconnect this at the alkyne bond, and that that's a bond that I could put back together with a primary halide. That's excellent, JC. That is exactly what I'm looking for. Very nicely done. Okay, so if we follow suit with that, then what we can do is we can do a bond disconnect, and we could say that this could come from this guy and this guy, and that these are synthons, and that these synthons represent the primary alkyl halide, and this one represents the alkynyl anion that I could bring in as the sodium group. And that's really as much work as I need to do, because those are of two carbons or less. And so now with those two synthons, I could take it in the forwards direction and I can put this reaction together. So this is route B. Route B is taking me from, and I don't have to show how I make the alkyne. I can just simply use it. It didn't ask me to make the alkyne from anything in particular. And so I can just write down the alkyne there. That makes my new bond. And then hydration with water, sulfuric acid, and mercury 2 sulfate. That will go through the enol. And the enol that it will go through will be the one where the hydroxyl group is on the second carbon, not on the primary carbon. That enol is temporary, and it tautomerizes into the ketone, and we're done. All right, but I want to revisit this problem for a second, because it could be that there's another solution here from A. In A, I could envision clipping off a component in A that would take me to two synthons. And those synthons would be something like methyl bromide. And the other guy has too many carbons, so it's gonna have to come from the terminal alkyne molecule that we'll have to deprotonate. But we can't stop there because that's three carbons. And so I'm gonna have to chunk off another piece of this and take it back and say that this could come from CH3 plus and the alkynyl anion, and those are synthons. And CH3Br would be the other synthon for that. And so now I've got it back into two carbons or less, and now I could take that forward. And I could do another synthesis here that would be A. So I could take CH3Br react it with the alkyl anion, which again, I don't have to show the formation of. That makes the first bond, but then I would have to treat it with one sodium amide and then two CH3Br again. That now makes the internal alkyne, and treatment of that with water, sulfuric acid, and mercury sulfate would again give me the same product. And so I have two reactions that I can do, two solutions to that problem, depending upon how you see the problem. And you can see that if I went through B, that this is less steps, that I'm able to put it together in basically two steps. And that if I go the A route, also viable, there's nothing here that prevents me from achieving my goal, but it takes three steps to do it. And what I've said is, in terms of doing this on an exam or a quiz, that I don't distinguish between the number of steps and I don't give more points for the less number of steps. What I award points for is a successful synthesis that gets you to the end product. So it's not generally about how fast can you do it. Okay, JC, what would happen if we use 9-BBN? Does the ketone become an aldehyde? For step B, JC, if you use 9-BBN on this material, you would have ended up with the aldehyde. If you use 9-BBN on this material, you're still going to end up with the same ketone. It wouldn't make any difference on what happens in A. So yeah, that's a good question. And if we were asked for the aldehyde here, the aldehyde would limit our possibilities, that route B would work a lot better for the aldehyde than route A. You wouldn't be able to get to the aldehyde from route A in three steps. We could do it. I could show you how to do it, but it would take a lot more steps in order to convert that the triple bond and get the triple bond on the terminal end of the molecule would be challenging. So that's the first one. And this is a typical sort of synthesis problem where we limit you by the number of carbons that you're starting with. So you're not being taken back to any specific starting material, but you're just taken back to a certain number of carbons. In some of the problems, we limit your starting materials and tell you what you have to work from. For instance, let's say that we want to use this material. This is 2-bromo ethylbenzene, and we want to also use methylbromide, and we want to use those two things together to create that's the product we want to shoot for. And so the first thing here to do is to start off and just to look and see where the carbons are. In terms of our functional groups. Sterling, 9-BBN is strictly hindered, so it will favor an anti-Markovnikov addition of the OH that tautomerizes to an aldehyde. That is correct, based on JC's question and what JC was doing. Yeah. Okay, so we've mapped the problem. So there's my problem mapping and just figuring out where my carbons are going. This is carbon number three. That will probably be number three in terms of the way that we need to put it together. But in sequencing and figuring out how it's going to go together, let's start the retrosynthesis. And remember, the arrow means comes from. So I'm asking, what molecule can I take this back to that will allow me to produce the carbonyl in the place where it's been located? Alpha to the aromatic ring system. What functional group do I go back to? The alkyne, yes. So I'll go back to that alkyne and I'll keep my map going as I'm looking at this, 1, 2, and 3. So this step is called a functional group transformation. Or a functional group interconversion. You're taking one functional group and you're turning it into a progenitor functional group, a functional group that can be converted back into that carbonyl. And then from there, we have to address, since now we're at the alkyne, we should address the additional carbon. This is a good point to add that next carbon in as our next step. So this is a bond disconnection, and we will disconnect it into the two synthons. And as we disconnect it, this piece here is bond disconnect. Once we disconnect it, we can think about these two as being synthons that are the CH3Br. And this guy can be created. And I'm going to take it back instead of to the anion, I'm going to take it back to that acetylene molecule for a second. Because I've got to work backwards to this two carbon chain over here with the bromide on it. And I got to figure out how do I get that back to that two carbon chain with the bromide. And so this piece here is essentially done. We've figured that piece out. What we need to do is we need to work on the second half of this in order to get it back to the bromide. So I need to keep going and ask, well, where does alkynes come from? How do I make an alkyne? So I don't want to add any more carbons or take away any more carbons. I just simply want to convert this into a functional group, which alkynes can be made from. HBr and an alkene. JC, I'm thinking you're on the right track, but I don't think it's stated correctly. I think that if you think back to how we can make an alkyne, generally the way that we make an alkyne is from one of three possibilities. So maybe I should draw all three. And I get to cheat because I can draw and paste. And I want to fit that guy in there. That's my third possibility. My three possibilities are two halogens. In that position, two halogens in that position, or two halogens in that position. So they can be 1-1 digeminal. They could be 1-2, or they could be 2-2 geminal. And all of those, if I go through and do an elimination and I use LDA or I use potassium tributoxide, I can convert all three of those back into that alkyne. So now the question is, which one of these can I create from that? And when I look at it, I know that I could create these guys from the alkyne, but if I had the alkyne, I wouldn't have to make it. So that's sort of like a circular argument. This one would be hard to make from the alkyne. And this one could be made not from an alkyne, but this one could be made from an alkene. And not reacting with HBr, but reacting with Br2. And so what I've got is I've got something that I don't know how to make and something that I do know how to make. But if I knew how to make it, then I wouldn't need it. And so, because that's my next molecule that I have over there. And that alkene could be made from my starting material. Can everybody see that? Okay, so turning this around and writing it in the forwards direction. I want to go from that material to a molecule that is called styrene. What reagent will allow me to achieve that elimination to form styrene? This is an E2. And this is a good primary substrate, so a small base will likely do substitution, and I want to do elimination. So what sort of thing do I need? Good. So JC is giving me potassium tert-butoxide, or I could have used LDA. Is the other, yes, Ashley, perfect. LDA is the other one. That's very good. Okay, now I'm going to take that and produce the dihalogen, and I'm going to suggest that we go for bromide because that's easier. So what reagent allows me to do this reaction? And you can see how this skill set fits with the schemes that I was giving you earlier and this idea of where do I find the reagent in order to accomplish this, and that all these skill sets kind of go together. So what reagent, Br2. So this is just a halogenation. Usually these are done in a nonpolar solvent, carbon tetrachloride. Is the most common. Now, I want to do the elimination and substitution all in one shot here, because I think it's going to be easier than breaking it up into multiple steps. So number one, I want to do the E2. And then number two, I want to do the SN2 reaction with the appropriate electrophile. So how do I achieve the E2, pulling off the proton, pulling off and doing the double dehydrohalogenation, and then the subsequent removal of the proton at the end of the resulting alkyne? What reagent allows me to do that? That works. So we would use sodium amide. And that is done in liquid ammonia. And I'm seeing an X there, meaning excess. Oftentimes the book is using this, they're saying excess. They're using a capital X and a lowercase s to mean excess. When I write excess, you can do it that way. I'll understand what you're saying. I usually just write excess, just so it's clear to everybody and there's no mistakes. And then I need the nucleophile with which, excuse me, the electrophile with which I'm going to react this. So for the SN2, what is my one carbon that got added on here? How did that come into this reaction? What reagent did we use? And maybe we should peek back up because we're looking at now this step here, going from here and adding this together. So I need to also add in the methyl bromide. So that's my second step right here. You'll frequently see these written on the same arrow. Rather than showing ionic intermediates, we generally don't isolate the ionic intermediates. And so what they'll do is they will create the anion and use the anion and go directly to the next neutral molecule, rather than showing that intermediate step of creating the anion. So that's very common. Okay, let's take a look and see where we need to go now. Now I need to do the functional group transformation, and I need to just put the carbonyl in there. So my next step takes me directly to my final product. What reagent is going to allow me to do that? Nine BBN since steric. And Ashley says mercury sulfate. All right, JC and Ashley are dueling. We have dueling competing ideas. Let's investigate these two ideas and see what happens. I like this. Quick review of what's going to happen here. Let's use 9 BBN first. When 9 BBN works, 9 BBN works primarily on sterics. And so what would happen with 9-BBN is 9-BBN would seek to avoid the sterics of the large aromatic ring system. That would place the boron in this position as it goes through and does its hydroboration, doing the syn addition. And then through oxidation, this would be converted into the enol. And it does so with retention of any stereo configuration. That includes double bond geometry. That also includes any stereocenters. That then is an enol that would tautomerize. And we give that product based on our numbering system of 1, 2, and 3, 1, 2, and 3, 1, 2, and 3, so that the oxygen is landing on number 3. If we go the route where we hit it with water, sulfuric acid, and mercury sulfate, then when this reaches out and grabs the proton, there are two possible outcomes. One possible outcome is that it would protonate in such a way as to put the positive charge adjacent to the ring system, and the other with the positive charge away from the ring system. Let's call this A and B. Now, which one of those carbocations is more stable, A or B?
A.
A, and why?
Resonance from the ring.
Excellent, Bibi. Yeah. So when we look at resonance from the ring system, that means this one major, lower energy. This one has no resonance. And so our water molecule then will come in and attack at that point. That's going to set up the situation where we're going to form the enol. And I'm just going to skip a couple of steps here because I don't want to do the full mechanism. But that's going to give us this enol that when it tautomerizes, tautomerizes to the correct ketone. So the utility of 9-BBN is that it puts the OH as far away as possible from the big group. That is correct, JC. 9-BBN operates both electronically and sterics. So if there are no sterics for 9-BBN to operate, BBN will operate like BH3 and will work electronically. And by electronically, what I mean is if I have no steric difference, such as this one where there's really no sterics to talk about, then 9-BBN will work on the electronic differences in that it is a concerted addition, but asymmetrical. And what it seeks to do is it seeks to develop a partial positive on the more stable position in terms of the transition state. And so 9-BBN without sterics is governed by electronics. Just like BH3THF. However, when there are sterics, then 9-BBN is governed by the sterics. So 9-BBN can do both, but the sterics issue, if sterics are present, will overwhelm 9-BBN's desire to be governed by electronics and will push it in the opposite direction. And that's the value of 9-BBN, is that 9-BBN will operate on sterics as opposed to electronics if sterics are present and creating issues. So what all of this tells us is that because of the resonance with the carbocation, straight hydration with water, sulfuric acid, mercury sulfate is the answer that I want here. So here, we'll do it in red. We want water, sulfuric acid, and mercury sulfate. See you next page for details and the choice of the selection. Okay. Good example. Let's make it harder. Same problem with a twist. So we just did this problem. We just did starting from this guy and CH3BR. We asked you to make that guy. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to start from a different material. And this guy, and I want you to make the same thing. And this one is harder. Okay, so why is this harder? Well, in the other one, what you had was you had two carbons here that set you up to be able to make the alkyne, and then the alkyne was able to attack the methyl bromide to make the carbon chain that we needed, and it put the alkyne in the right position. So what happened here that was really nice is that we were able to do this bond disconnect and to treat these carbons as 1, 2, and 3 and 1, 2, and 3. And it made for a fairly simple process. Now you've got a process where it is 1, 2, and 3, 1, 2, and 3, and you're going to have to disconnect between 1 and 2. And disconnecting between 1 and 2 is going to make this much harder because we don't have the chemistry yet or the chemical knowledge that comes out of the alcohol chapter that would make this a little bit simpler. So we're going to have to kind of do this the hard way. All right, so if that's what we've got to do, then that's what we got to do. So we start working backwards. We start thinking about how we're going to chunk this thing apart and with an eye as to what we're going to go back to. All right, so I don't see any other options unless anybody sees something that I don't. Other than we're going to have to go back to that alkyne, because that's the only way that we can get that carbonyl in the position that we want it. Does everybody agree? Okay, but I can't disconnect this alkyne here because my carbons still are in this position, 1, 2, and 3. And I don't know any way of tearing apart an alkyne between 1 and 2 and putting it back together. So that means that I need to take this alkyne back to something. I need to keep going backwards. And I need to make that alkyne from something that I can tear apart between 2 and 3. So maybe what we can do is we know that there are 3 different substrates that I can make alkynes from. And so we can consider the 3 different substrates. That I could go back to that, or that. And actually, this one might be hard because this might produce the terminal alkyne. And so I would be more concerned with that one. Maybe these two are the sort of the better options. And the answer is that this guy might produce that guy, which is not what I want. Okay, so again, this sort of geminal arrangement of the halogens is produced from the reaction of an alkyne with HBr. But this type, where they're vicinal, so these are geminal, these are vicinal. The geminals are built from an alkyne reaction with HBr. But the vicinals are built on an alkene reaction with Br2. And so this allows us to be able to go back to an alkene. And so maybe this is the right spot. Go back to. And that would have then come from the alkene. Geometry not specific. And then that alkene, what was that made from? All the while, we're trying to go back to just this one carbon chunk here and two carbons here. So what was this guy made from? How do I make alkenes? What sort of reactions allow me to make alkenes? E2s. Thank you, Pokey. So an E2 reaction, and if I were going to do an E2 reaction and I wanted to make that alkene, then I better make sure that I have a leaving group in the appropriate position. That's my synthon to be able to go through and do that elimination. And so that leaving group, LG could equal a bromide, an iodide, a chloride, a tosylate, or mesylate, or triflate, or any of those things. And so maybe, just for consistency, we go with the bromide. Now, where did that bromide come from? How do we make bromides? From what functional group? All with the idea that I want to break this bond eventually. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get to unsaturation in this back end of the molecule. I'm trying to get a double bond and eventually a triple bond back here so that I can split this off. So this guy could have come from that. And that double bond could have come from hydrogenation of the alkyne. And now I can finally break that bond. Now I can take this back. To my primary alkyl halide and the alkynyl anion, which still needs to be taken back to that material yet. So I still need to work on this alkynyl anion. This guy came from acetylene, which came from the dibromide, which came from the alkene, which came from the alkyl halide. There's the whole retrosynthesis now. Okay, you ready to see it go in the forward direction? All right. What we're going to do is we're going to take that ethyl bromide. And we're first going to do an E2 reaction. So I'm going to ask you guys for the reagents again. I want to produce ethylene. This is an E2 reaction. What base do I use to ensure that I'm going to get an E2? LDA will work. Then I'm going to take that and I want to brominate it to produce the vicinal bromide so that I can produce the alkynyl anion. What reagent allows me to do that? Br2. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to react this 1 and 2, and I am going to smoothly put this together. To make that guy. So the first thing I need to do, the first reagent is the base to form the alkynyl anion. What base is it that forms my alkynyl anion? Sodium amide. In liquid ammonia, and then I need to add in my electrophile that's going to react with that I just created. And so that's going to be the 2-carbon chunk, and I need to add in the rest of this component. And this is that guy. All right, from there, let's go back and look at our map. From there, I'm going to go to the alkene and then to the bromide in a very specific position in a regioselective addition of the bromide. So first, I got to get this reduced down to the alkene. Give me a reagent to accomplish that. Sodium, yes, BB, that would work. Sodium isn't sufficient in and of itself, but that is one component of that reagent. Sodium in ammonia, that's the dissolving metals reaction, that is correct. Can somebody give me an alternative to that reaction? As I untangle myself. H2 and Lindlar is also correct. So sodium in liquid ammonia or H2 and Lindlar. Either of those are correct in order to be able to do that reaction. Once I do that, now this one, let's see who's on top of it for this one. Now I want to put the bromide there. Who knows what they're doing now? Hydrohalogenation. Ashley, that's close. It is a type of hydrohalogenation. But if I hydrohalogenate this directly, this is what would happen. So if I take HBr and just hit this with HBr, it's going to initially protonate. It'll grab the proton. In so doing, it will create the secondary carbocation. And I will very quickly get a hydride transfer in order to form the benzylic carbocation because of the stability of benzylic carbocations. And this is now resonance stabilized. And so your bromide substitution then would come and happen at this point. And maybe this isn't horrible. I can see a way forward with this, but it wasn't what was intended. HBr and peroxides. Okay, so Pokey has an idea. Let's do HBr and peroxides. In that case, what will happen is in the first step, it will grab the bromine radical, and the bromine radical will add to the terminal end of the molecule, and I'll end up with that radical, which will then grab the proton in a free radical acid base reaction, and it will quench and give me the substituent on the terminal end. So the peroxide one won't do it either. So I can't do it with HBr, and I can't do it with HBr and peroxide.
Could you do an oxymercuration, demercuration, and then make the hydroxide group leave?
Oh, they are digging deep now. Very nice. Yes, we can do an oxymercuration, demercuration. And the way that we would do that is that we would do one mercury acetate, two, we would add in sodium bromide, and then we would do the sodium borohydride to remove the mercury. And the way that that works, let me steal that reaction. I'll do it down here. How much room do I have? How much room do I need? Let's do it down here to show you that mechanism. In that case, what happens is the mercury is hanging out here with the two acetates. That gives me negative charges on each acetate and a two positive on the mercury. Electrons swing out, kick out an acetate, and electrons from the mercury, which has numerous valence electrons, bind back to the double bond, creating a cyclic mercurium ion. The cyclic mercurium ion, I'll draw it on this side, looks like this. However, one side of this bond, this side, is partial positive and the mercury sort of holds on to both sides, but holds on to this side less because of where the partial positive is. And basically, it's using its valence electrons to keep its finger on the button so that things can't migrate to it. It reduces down the positive charge, making it challenging for anything to migrate into that position. Then the incoming nucleophile, the sodium bromide, the bromide anion displaces this. This is the beauty of oxymercuration demercuration. Now we have the mercury bound to the acetate. And in this position, we have had a bromide that has essentially done an SN2. And then in the next step where we use sodium borohydride, we get hydride transfer that knocks out the mercury. And so what that does is that allows us to be able to put the bromide where we want it without alkyl or hydride shifts. Yeah, that's a beautiful little reaction. And so those are the three reactions, which is kind of nice because we see all three of those reactions here now. We have HBr, HBr and peroxide, and oxymercuration demercuration that allows us to be able to bring in some nucleophile, whatever it want, if we want a halogen or if we want a water or whatever we want, and allows us to be able to put it in there without any competing shifts. So that's important, that when you go through a carbocation, carbocations shift and you can get all kinds of different products. What I want to call those isomers, structural isomers in terms of the products. Okay, so we got the bromine where we want it. The next step is to go ahead and to create the alkene and then take it back to the dihalogen, back to the alkyne, and then we'll hydrate it. So those are our last few steps. So let's keep going with that. Now what we want is we want to get the double bond in here between carbons number 1 and 2. So we want to use a small base as opposed to a bulky base. So this is specific small strong base. Sodium OET ethoxide and some heat to ensure that we go through the elimination. Trying to push an E2 with a small base. Then we want to put the bromides across the double bond. The bromides going across the double bond are accomplished with simple Br2. The Br2 does not react with the aromatic ring system because of the stability of the aromatic ring system. So these conjugated systems being more stable than just a regular double bond will not brominate, at least not on the time frame that the double bond will brominate. Then we want to eliminate it to create the carbon-carbon triple bond. So now we go back to a strong base, a strong bulky base. Either potassium tert butoxide or LDA. Yep, Ashley, LDA again. And then finally, our last step is with the water, H2SO4, and mercury sulfate. That will go through the enolate. And so we have done now the more challenging problem. We could see all of that one start to finish. And these guys, are an aside. Are we seeing some of the patterns now, though? We're seeing over and over again that I'm going to these vicinal bromides. From the vicinal bromides, I'm creating alkynes. So that vicinal bromide alkyne thing is a repeated pattern that we're seeing over and over again. We are seeing, and we see it here again, as another time, we're seeing the hydration of an alkyne and controlling that hydration, depending upon what substitution pattern it is that we're looking for. And we're seeing the bringing together, this SN2 reaction, this bringing together of the alkynyl anion and some primary alkyl halide to make the new carbon-carbon bond. That those are three really big repeated themes that I'm seeing over and over again. So when I look at this, and I've got a little, oh, where am I having it? Chem 12, lecture notes, fall study guides, common themes. I have this in Canvas now. And I'll drop it in so we can see it here. So I have these common themes, and we didn't use this today yet, but if you're starting with something that is unfunctionalized, the common theme is always to brominate it and go for a tertiary position or a resonance stabilized position, or to brominate in the allylic position. As long as you have a molecule which doesn't have, which has, I should say, strong symmetry, so that we only get one product out of this rather than getting a whole ton of products out of it, then we can go through and we can do it that way. Formation of alkenes. We have control over which side we eliminate. So if we go with a bulky base, we can go for the less sterically substituted alkene. If we go for the small base, we can go for the more sterically substituted alkene. The formation of the alkynes are always coming from our vicinal halogens. So we take an alkene, we brominate it, we get the vicinal halogens, and then we eliminate it in order to get to our alkyne. So that's a very common theme. And then making new carbon-carbon bonds, we work from the triple bond, reacting it with the base, and then the electrophile. That makes a new carbon-carbon bond. In general, if we want to just generalize that, we can take some R with a leaving group as long as this here must be primary or it goes E2. And so that's, I think that what I'm showing there is I'm showing that we can have and start with the alkyne, deprotonate it and react it with a primary alkyl halide, or we can show that primary alkyl halide as being the starting material, and we can just bring in this alkyne as a reagent if we're not being asked to make it. And either way, we're putting together a very similar thing. And then what we haven't got into yet is I have this idea of use of epoxides and how epoxides can be used as substrates to not only bring in the alkyne, but to give you an alcohol, or to go through and do an elimination to give you an alkene and an alcohol. So there's a couple of ideas here that we will explore in more detail. And then this goes back to your SN2 chapter, where you were doing SN2, SN1, E1, E2. In the SN2 chapter, we learned how to make ethers by making the oxygen anion and reacting that with a primary alkyl halide. And so we can make ethers in that way. Or we can even make circular ethers. We can make ring systems if we have an internal leaving group, we pull that proton, this can swing around and do a reaction that is an SN2 reaction that is an internal, an intramolecular SN2 reaction. And we could do things like that. And so this is the idea that are common themes that we're looking through each one of these problems that we do. We kind of keep an eye out for these common themes, these common tools that we use over and over and over again in each one of these synthesis. And so yes, the molecule is different and sometimes the progression is different, but the tools are all the same and the reactions are all the same. And so you're looking for that pattern recognition and you're not getting caught up in how different the molecule is. You're looking for the combination of those tools and the order in which you use them to make the material. Is this helping, making sense? And in terms of those problem sets, if I just show you really quick in Canvas, in practice problems, free radical, nuts, modules. Alkene, alkynes, synthesis practice problems. I have the common themes, and then I have synthesis problems, and there are, I don't know, like 18 of these, where they go in fairly easy progressions and gets more and more complicated. And you can start to see some of the structures and things that I was showing you where we have to use the alcohols to do some ether synthesis and some SN2 things. And even that ring formation idea coming into play. And so using the common themes as sort of a guide, not an answer key, but a guide as to how to access some of these types of frameworks. And then there is also a solution set so that all the solutions are here written out. The semicolon separates each individual step. And so I know they're not all written out as if it were a synthesis, but each of the reagents are there and each step is separated out by a semicolon as individual steps. Okay. Any place where I use a comma means that that's an additional reagent that is required. The semicolon is the arrow, the separation of each step. So I think I've got everything there for you to do some strong practice with these. And I'm looking at the clock and I have 10 more minutes and wondering, you guys have been super quiet. You've been answering my questions, but I don't know that I've been answering your questions. I don't like it when it gets quite this quiet. When it gets this quiet, it means I'm overwhelming you and you're just trying to like maintain and keep up. Or at least that's what I often interpret that to mean. It either means I'm doing a really good job and I'm answering all your questions, or I'm overwhelming you and you're just trying to keep up at this point. Yeah, they are challenging, but it comes down to practice. This is not something that you can just watch somebody do and figure out how to do. It is definitely something that takes time and practice. And I won't lie, some struggle. There's some struggle that goes into this in terms of the practice and learning how to do these. And that's why we start off on the more basic ones, JC, so that I have, if we look at the progression and I go back to the problem set and I show you sort of the next one. The next one really isn't so bad. I start back over with a simpler starting point and then a progression from this. So I've built this with progression in mind. So if you jump in and you just think, oh, I'm just going to do them out of order. Doing them out of order is probably not the best idea. Doing them in order, they're built in order to help you see the pattern from one to the next to the next. So if we look at this one, and you try to find what I call that handle, There's four carbons in this one. Actually, five. We've got the fifth one up here. There are no new carbons. So that means that all I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get this terminal alkyne in this place. And so I have to ask, well, where do terminal alkynes come from? Well, what did we say in terms of terminal alkynes? Where do they come from? What's my best target right now? The vicinal dibromide. And where do those vicinal dibromides come from? So the vicinal dibromides come from alkenes. And alkenes, when I look at it and I got to go back to this material, let's take a step back. I know that the only way that I can functionalize this is to be able to put a bromide in that tertiary position, right? And so I'm shooting now for something that is intermediary between these two, which means that in order to get this eliminated product here, I probably had to migrate that bromide into that position. And that means that an intermediary between these two would have been the double bond in that position. And so a lot like those mazes when you were a kid and you were working from the center out because it was easier to work from the center out. Sometimes you also work from the start of the maze and work your way in, that you work both paths simultaneously sometimes to find that meeting point. And sometimes working that way to find the meeting point can be really constructive. And now it's just a scheme where you give me the reagents. So now all we do is we go forward and we say, all right, how do I put the bromide on there? What reaction allows me to do this? And this is the first skill set. This is what you need to do is these reactions need to come a little bit faster. You need to have these as working knowledge in order to be able to make this work. So how do I brominate this thing in the tertiary position? This was from the free radical chapter. So we're Br2 and light. Once we brominate it, now what we want to do is we want to create that more substituted double bond. So we don't want a bulky base because a bulky base will pull one of these protons and I'll get the elimination out here. So I want a small base. So a small base is something like sodium ethoxide or sodium methoxide. And some heat. And then I want to migrate that bromide. I want to get the bromide out in that position. So I have to think between my two hydrohalogenations, or three, because we have oxymercuration, demercuration, how do I get the bromide in that position? Well, this is the more substituted position. This would be the more stable carbocation. That's where the bromide would go if I just hit this with HBr. So this one must be the opposite. So this is HBr and peroxide. Then I've got to go to that terminal double bond. So I want to get to that. Now, which base do I want to use? Big base or small base? LDA, Ashley, correct. Use a large bulky base, LDA or potassium terbutoxide. Bulky base important here. Now go ahead and make the vicinal bromides. And that's Br2. Once you've got the vicinal bromides, now go through and do the elimination. One thing to be careful of here. We do want to use sodium amide, NaNH2, but because we desire to have the proton on it, you want to make sure that you add in the dilute acid and not just stop at the base, because otherwise you'll end up with the anion. So we want to make sure that we're putting that proton back on. And we're done. And so we went all the way through the retro, working both sort of forwards and backwards till we met in the middle. And then we turn it into a scheme where we figure out each reagent to accomplish each thing. And like I said, with this progression, if you take this idea, just to show you kind of how the progression is working, if you take this idea, and then you look at the next one that I have for you, you can see the commonality in the starting material. Oh, I flipped this. That wasn't very nice of me. And also, for some reason, I can't draw it. There we go. Essentially, what is different between these, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, new carbon, new functional group, that from this molecule, if you take and just add a carbon onto this and then hydrate it using 9-BBN, you can then put this carbonyl in place. And so all of this reaction that we did to get to this is part of the answer for the next one. And that's the way a lot of these are working in terms of progression, is that pay attention to what you did on the previous problem to help you figure out how to tackle the new problem that I'm giving you. Because repetition is good. And so I'm trying to build in that repetition and that pattern recognition. That's what we're trying to build. Okay. Would you just add mercury sulfate? To get to this one? No, because what's going to happen is it's going to come from this. One, two, three, four, five. I don't actually have that. Or I take it back. It's not going to come from that. It's going to come from this. There's our carbon that we added. And we want the hydroxyl to end up 3, 4, 5. We want the hydroxyl to end up on number 4. If you just go through and hydrate this, they're both secondary. You're going to end up with a mixture of products. So if we take this and we hydrate it and we add water, H2SO4, mercury sulfate, you will end up with this product that you want, and 50% of this product that you don't want. And the reason is both of these positions are secondary with no difference. And so they're equivalent in terms of the carbocation formation, which means that you would get a split product ratio. So if you want this one, then the best way to do it is to leverage the sterics of the isopropyl group and to use a molecule that would function on sterics that would push it the other direction. Ho, ho, ho. That's right. Okay, that's good. I'm sensing a sense of humor coming back into this group. We have lost the sense of humor. The sense of humor needs to come back into this group. It's okay. It's just going to take a little bit of time, a little bit of time of going through these. I know that this material is challenging and that the synthesis in particular is challenging. Oh, and yes, that could be too. Distressing, de-stressing. All right. I'm over time, but I think I did everything that I want to do in this, and I want to move on to chapter 13 in the next lecture. So on Thursday, I'm going to try to move on to chapter 13. And maybe in the meantime, what you guys can do would be a really important thing to do right now is to start working through some of these problems and to figure out where your challenges are, to figure out what questions you have into how to go through these. And then in our next lab session, maybe on Thursday's lab session, to dedicate some time on Thursday to go through some of these and to answer your questions so that it's not watching me do these types of problems again, but we can come in, all right, I tried number 7 and this is what's killing me. And how can I get beyond this point? Or you know, any sort of questions like that that we can target more from your experience and your practice that will start making this give you more ownership over the material. And I think that might be a good use of time on Thursday in terms of the lab. But in terms of the lecture, I want to keep rolling on the alcohol chapters, because the alcohol chapter is going to give us many more tools to go through and to utilize in this type of synthesis. And many of those tools make many of these jobs easier. So rather than just adding in more tools and making it more complex, we'll find that as we move forward, some of these jobs that are taking us 5-7 steps, we can do in 2, if you know the right chemistry. So that's why it's not that I just want to get through that material, it's that it gives you more tools and makes some of these things easier for you. So I think it's important that we get to some of this, okay? All right, that was it. I'm all done. Thanks for your attention. I'll stay on the line if you guys have any questions. And for those in the afternoon lab, I'll see you at 3:00.